Are we a declining race? An old sailor's verdict. By Walter Hunt. Chapter 5. The Cause. Loose thoughts, like subterranean fires, burn inward, smothering with unchaste desires, but getting vent to rage and fury turn, burst in volcanoes and like Etna burn. The heat increases as the flames aspire, and turns the solid hills to liquid fire. So sensual flames, when raging in the soul, first vitiate all the parts, then fire the whole. Burn up the bright, the beauteous, the sublime, and turn our lawful pleasures into crime. Daniel Defoe. I have endeavoured, in the preceding chapters, to point out the connection between physical decline and profligacy and licentiousness, also that it may be traced, in a milder form, to propagation from the undeveloped species. I am well aware that there is nothing new in all this. Unfortunately, many efforts are being made to divert the public attention away from the real facts of the case. Many expert writers are now employed on the subject of the physical deterioration of the masses. No doubt they are doing a great amount of good socially, but their many volumes on the improper feeding of children, insanitary slum dwellings, insanitary workshops, the vitiated and smoke-laden atmosphere of large towns, etc., do not grapple the all-important problem. The man who deals with the question effectually must probe the painful business to the very core. This cannot be done without hurting the feelings of many who will resent the operation, and perhaps abuse those who inflict the pain for the public welfare. Quote, "The diseases of society can, no more than corporeal maladies, be prevented or cured without being spoken about in plain language." Quote, "It was true when these words were penned by John Stuart Mill, and it is as true today." My attention was first called to the subject of physical degeneracy some 30 years ago by the disastrous result of a certain vice, masturbation, practiced by boys at an establishment where I resided for some 9 or 10 months. There were about 800 boys in residence there at the time. They ate, drank, and slept together, so it is no wonder that the vice, once introduced, soon spread throughout the whole community. I became aware of the prevalence of this vice among the boys before I had been there many days, and also of the fact that, as a result, their constitutions were being ruined. The boys became pale and emaciated, and were soon subject to all sorts of petty ailments, and later on some of them to absolute disease. Remonstrance seemed useless at that stage, for they always denied indulging in the habit, so that it went on unchecked, except by an occasional caution from one or two who understood the nature of the evil. Some 9 or 10 years later, I was at a similar establishment, and was again shocked to find every indication of the existence of this same vice. Since that period, I have constantly come into contact with evidence of its existence in various parts of the world. Latterly, its demoralizing influence may be observed in all classes of the community. There is scarcely a school, according to medical evidence, where it is not indulged in by the children of both sexes, and its influence is being felt throughout the civilized world today as the cause of a deterioration. There is ample reason for supposing that the influence of this vice has affected various parts of Europe at different periods, like a blight for the last 2,000 years and more. I have spent many hours and searched some thousands of volumes in tracing its history, and I therefore venture to hope that the result of my studies may be of some use. The reluctance with which most English authors approach subjects connected with sexual matters, and all things connected with the organs of generation, has rendered it extremely difficult to deal with such a subtle vice as masturbation. However meagre the allusions made to it in history, it can scarcely be doubted that the vice has played a very important part in the downfall of nations. Without attempting to trace it among the bewildering religious ceremonies of the Orient, from which quarter it was probably introduced into Europe, it will be sufficient to note the first records of its existence there. Although we find it stated that the habit was prevalent among both the Egyptians and the Greeks, it is highly improbable that it was so to any extent until they had attained the very height of their culture, and it is then that we first find any mention of its prevalence. It is significant that both nations began to decline very rapidly as soon as they came in contact with the Persians, whose depraved physical condition was almost phenomenal at the time. The earliest mention of the habit in Europe, so far as I am aware, is in connection with Sappho, the celebrated Greek poetess who is said to have founded at Lesbos a school of young women who made a boast of their indulgence in it. Emanating from such a source, one can imagine how rapidly such a practice would be communicated from one to another throughout the state, and the amount of harm which would result from it. That it was communicated is evident, for we find frequent mentions of its prevalence with the other sex at a later period. Hippocrates denounced the habit as a vice which was the cause of many diseases, among others consumption. Profligacy of any description, in fact, was recognized by him as productive of disease. And there are various parts of this chapter that appear to be written in Greek, and there are some written in French and some in Latin, which gives you an idea of the level of intelligence of the average reader back in 1905 when this was written, and their grasp of the various different languages. Rather than attempting to read these other languages, I will continue just with the English parts. Hippocrates was evidently the principal authority of his day, and for many succeeding generations. It is not altogether surprising that his attention should have been drawn to the effects of l'abus de plaisir de l'amour, considering that he lived at a time when the Greeks, by their profligate habits, were preparing the way for their ultimate degradation, a period in which sensuality was almost unbridled. Although we look upon the period just prior to and the commencement of the present era as being the most immoral, some authors seem to think that the vice was not so prevalent then as in more modern times. It would, of course, be difficult to gauge the standard of physique at so remote a period in order to make comparison with the present day. There then follows a quote in French. This may be perfectly true, for when we consider the enormous incentive to vice during the intervening centuries, caused by an ever-increasing population, the demoralizing effects of people being pent up, sometimes for many months, in besieged cities, the existence of slum areas in all large towns, the increasing consumption of alcohol, and many other influences in connection with the growth of civilization, we cannot wonder that secret vice should have gained ground among the people. The ancients were also publicly cautioned against the evil effects of sexual vices, and we read of such men as Hippocrates, Aristotle, Democritus, Actius, Celsus, Sanctorius, and even the much-traduced Epicurus, who have given their testimony against the dissipation of the vital fluid. Tissot says, quote, Epicurus, that respectable man, who knew better than anyone that man could be happy only by pleasure, but who at the same time limited this pleasure, brackets, ordinary sexual congress, close brackets, by such a rule that a Christian hero would not disprove of. Epicurus looked upon the seed as part of the soul and body, and upon this opinion he founded his precepts, which enjoined its preservation. Close quote. Galen is the last to discuss these matters freely, and for many centuries the public mind appears to have been too much engrossed with religious affairs to leave room for such subjects. Therefore, the world was left in darkness, so far as written testimony goes, until the 18th or possibly 17th century, when the ravages made by sexual vices had become so apparent that a few of the bolder spirits of the medical profession came to the front to warn us of the evil of these vices. These are generally met with rebuke from the more orthodox, who preferred to go on practicing the healing art without concerning themselves much about causes. Frederick Hoffman, an eminent physician of Hall near Magdeburg, and the celebrated Hermann Boerhaave of Leiden were among the first to write on this subject at the commencement of the 18th century. They were followed shortly after by Dr. Tissot, author of the famous Trait de l'Onanisme, which traced many diseases to that evil. A 20th century writer, styling himself John Allen Godfrey, says that Tissot erected a colossal bogey when he wrote his Trait de l'Onanisme. John Allen Godfrey wrote in advocacy of the very vices denounced by Tissot and others, but I believe his book, entitled The Science of Sex, has been suppressed. It was a work calculated to do much harm in the hands of single people and widows, to whom he recommends occasional masturbation as a nervous sedative and a clarifier of the mind. Nothing could be wider of the truth, as I shall endeavour to show later on by reference to other medical works. Numerous works were produced by continental writers during the 18th and 19th centuries dealing with this question, and many and varied were the opinions called forth. It would appear that England had kept itself comparatively free from this grosser evil until well into the 19th century, but we find very little mention of it until that time. Daniel Defoe, although severely criticising matrimonial indiscrimination in his satire, Conjugal Lewdness, made no mention of solitary vice. Had such been prevalent in England at the time of his writing, 1727, it would hardly have escaped his attention, and would have called forth more scathing denunciation even than matrimonial wantonness. This apparent immunity might be accounted for by the comparative isolation brought about by the sea barrier. At any rate, the physical decline was not so apparent among the English people until after the Peninsular War, when our troops probably became contaminated with the vice, as they certainly were with syphilitic diseases. That masturbation was prevalent among continental troops is evident by the statement of M. Christian. Quote, Army en campagne, matelot isol sur le navire, tout payant le tribut à quête lui fatal. Close quote. Seamen also may have helped to introduce it in Great Britain. Evidence of a rapid deterioration during the last century is traceable in the reduction of the standard for recruits in the army. In 1845, the standard of height in the British Army was 5'6". In 72, it was reduced to 5'5". In 83, to 5'3". In 97, to 5'2". And in 1901, specials were actually enlisted as low as 5 foot. In 1845, the proportion of soldiers under 5'6" was about 1/10. In 1900, it was more than a half. In 1901, 11,896 men were examined, and 8,820, or nearly three quarters, were rejected. These figures were published in the Lancet of May 1902. There is nothing to show that this rapid decline has ceased, so that we are truly in a serious plight. I have already mentioned the name of Sir W. C. Ellis in connection with the rapid increase of lunacy. In his treatise on insanity from 1838, he devoted several notes to this habit as a caution to the medical profession. Quote, "Masturbation is a fertile source of insanity. I have no hesitation in saying that in a very large number of cases, in all public asylums, the disease may be attributed to that cause. The general debility which is caused by this disgusting habit is more severely felt in the brain and nervous system in some constitutions than in others, and whilst a pale face, general lassitude, drowsiness, cold extremities, trembling hands, and a voracious appetite are the indications of its existence in one, the brain is the first to give way in another, and insanity takes place." In commenting on the prevalence of this vice among young people, he said, "Would that I could take its melancholy victims with me in my daily rounds, and can point out to them the awful consequences which they do, but little suspect to be the result of its indulgence. I could show them those gifted by nature with high talents, and fitted to be an ornament and a benefit to society, sunk into such a state of physical and moral degradation as wrings the heart to witness, and still preserving with the last remnant of a mind gradually sinking into fatuity, the consciousness that their hopeless wretchedness is the just reward of their own misconduct." Copland's Dictionary of Medicine, Volume 2, page 492, thus deals with, quote, "exciting causes of insanity. Whatever exhausts organic nervous power both predisposes to and directly occasions insanity. Many of these causes, which thus affect a nervous energy, favour congestion of the brain, and occasion disease of the vital organs, tending to disorder the functions of the brain sympathetically. Of these, the most influential are masturbation and libertinism, or sexual excess, sensuality in all its forms, and inordinate indulgence in the use of intoxicating substances and stimulants. The baneful influence of the first of these causes is very much greater in both sexes than is usually supposed, and is, I believe, a growing evil. It is even more prevalent in the female than in the male sex, and in the former it usually occasions various disorders in connection with the sexual organs, as leucorrhea, displacement of the uterus, difficult or disordered or suppressed or profuse menstruation, both regular and irregular hysteria, catalepsy, ecstasis, vertigo, and various states of disordered sensibility." Close quote. In Dr. R. P. Ritchie's Frequent Causes of Insanity in Young Men from 1861, we read, quote, "It is remarkable that writers on mental maladies pass over this section of mental affection with scarcely any allusion to the occasion of it, the vice of masturbation. I am also induced to submit the following observation to the profession, from the fact that in 119 cases which are recognized after admission in Bethnal House Asylum to be due to this melancholy cause, in only 6 was the true cause understood previous to admission, while the greater proportion of these cases in which the supposed cause was stated were attributed to religion and overstudy. There is little doubt that in this way a variety of obscure maladies are occasioned." Close quote. More attention is now being given to sexual abuses as being productive of insanity, and in some of our asylums, patients are being specially treated for that phase of the disease. Dr. Copland tells us that epilepsy precedes insanity from this cause, and either it or general paralysis often complicates the advanced progress of the mental disorder when thus occasioned. Epilepsy being a functional disease of the nervous system, it is quite reasonable to suppose that in many cases it may be traced to the vice in question, although there are some who deny that this is the case. There is no other act which affects the nervous system so much as the one in question. Dr. Kirschman, in Zimson's Cyclopedia, says, quote, "It has been shown that the mischief does not consist so much in the loss of semen. By far the most important influence of sexual excess is upon the nervous system and upon nutrition. The act of copulation and those mechanical irritations which have the like effect are well known to be connected with a very intense excitement of the nervous system, which reaches its highest point just before ejaculation and ends by the reflex discharge. Even in a state of health, the act is followed by a notable degree of relaxation, but if repeated often, the physiological effect becomes more enduring." Close quote. This explains why masturbation should be considered as the principal cause of epilepsy. Turning to Sir Thomas Watson's Lectures on the Principles and Practice of Physique, Volume 2, page 651, we read, quote, "There are certain vices which are justly considered as influential and aggravating, and even in creating a disposition to epilepsy. Debauchery of all kinds, the habitual indulgence in intoxicating liquors, and above all, the most powerful disposing cause of any, not congenital, is masturbation, a vice which it is painful and difficult even to allude to in this manner, and still more difficult to make the subject of inquiry with a patient. But there is too much reason to be certain that many cases of epilepsy owe their origin to this wretched and degrading habit, and more than one or two patients have voluntarily confessed to me their conviction that they had brought upon themselves the epileptic paroxysms for which they sought my advice." Close quote. Sir Thomas touched an important note here. It is painful and difficult even to allude to. Of course it is painful. That is the reason why it has gained such a hold on the people. Masturbation would never have spread in this country, or in any other, to the present extent, if medical men had done their duty, as instructed citizens, and openly expounded the subject and all its woes. It is only by public instruction that the evil can be checked, and the sooner open inquiry is commenced, the better it will be for humanity at large. Dr. R. P. Ritchie says, quote, "Most confirmed insane epileptics indulge in the propensity." Close quote. Dr. Ritchie was one of those who did not think epilepsy a result of the vice, as he thought that the vice succeeded, rather than preceded, the first epileptic attacks. I think it would be difficult for him or anyone else except the patient himself to decide that question. M. Christian was of the same opinion as Dr. Ricci. There now follows another quote in French. Dr. Ricci seemed to think that the epilepsy preceded the vice, because he thought the vice to be of rarer occurrence with the public than is really the case. He said, quote, "If it be said that the epilepsy in those so afflicted, who practised the vicious habit in the asylum, was due to it, then must the vice be of much more frequent occurrence than I have been able to trace." There then follows another quote in French. Evidently, then, epilepsy was no mystery among the ancients. They did not allow a Mrs. Grundy to influence them in the diagnosis of a disease. They were not to be deterred by any scrupulosity of speech. They called a spade, and recognised disease as the inevitable result of their own misconduct, and probably they were much better off in consequence. I quote another French author who recognises the discretion of the ancients. There then follows another quote in French. Doubtless, many people object to these subjects being dealt with in such plain language as that used by some of the French writers. But the importance of the subject is so great that it demands the plainest of plain language and the courage to resist any attempt to taboo it. Note what was said by a writer in the principal medical organ of this country only a few years ago, viz., quote, "The practice of masturbation has come to be regarded as an incurable evil, and the discussion of so unsavoury a subject is therefore tabooed." Close quotes. And that was from The Lancet, September the 23rd, 1899. How, in the name of reason, is this evil to be overcome if the subject is tabooed? Are our children to be left a prey to this curse of civilization simply because the subject is too unsavoury for us to discuss? Never let it be said that Englishmen allowed posterity to suffer such an enormity for the paltry reason that they had not sufficient courage to deal with a distasteful subject. The same writer tells us, quote, "Still, the habit is prevalent with a certain class of neurotics, and medical men, when they are brought face to face with such cases, feel helplessly at sea. In 19 cases out of 20, moral suasion is utterly useless." Close quote. It is evident that all medical men do not feel helplessly at sea when brought face to face with it, or we should not have such valuable information as we are now able to obtain on the subject. Moral suasion is not useless. Very many people have been saved from lives of degradation and misery by a word of warning. Of the 119 cases of masturbatic lunatics recorded by Dr. Ritchie, 20 recovered. Therefore, it is wrong to say that in 19 cases out of 20, moral suasion is utterly useless. Dr. Zimmerman gives a very good description of the beneficial results of moral suasion upon a young man under his charge. Again, there follows another quote in French. "The imbecile does not often meet with such treatment as this young man received from Dr. Zimmerman, for few men possess the patience exhibited by him. These unfortunate people must be in a very degraded condition, and it must be a great strain on those who have to deal with them. But at the same time, it is reasonable to conclude that if more dependence were placed upon moral treatment and less upon mechanical restraints, results would be more satisfactory." Here is a specimen of the treatment meted out in some establishments. Quote, "Bromide of potassium, given freely and continuously, takes away sexual desire and competence, but it produces great weakness and emaciation, and cannot be continued for any length of time. Therefore, it is only a temporizing remedy, and as far as we know, there is no permanent cure. We have used faradization to the spine with benefit, but this also was temporizing. Treatment is to prevent the habit, if possible, but by no means have yet been devised by which this can be done. Blistering the prepuce we have found useful, but only for a time. Dr. Yellowlees rings the prepuce with silver wire, as the snouts of swine are wired, to prevent their routing. The plan is ingenious enough and has been to a certain extent successful. In females, even, clitoridectomy has failed." Close quote. From Psychological Medicine by Bucknell and Tuke. Surely, if no other remedies than blistering, ringing, faradization and doses of bromide of potassium can be applied, it would be better to put an end to such existences. As a matter of fact, I have read of cases where bromide of potash has been used with fatal results. But we have seen that other means may be used. may fit the rigueur to mes efforts vers sa moralisation. Numerous other authors mention epilepsy as a result of l'abus des plaisirs de l'amour. And then there follows another long quote in French. Masturbation and other irritation of the external genitals is by most authors given as a cause of epilepsy. From The Lancet, July the 14th, 1900. Dr. J.H. McDougall, translator of Lallemand's Treatise on Spermatorrhea, gives an interesting description of three cases of epilepsy which were caused by this habit. But what need to draw further on the testimony of the medical profession? We have seen that they are mostly agreed that epilepsy is traceable to a large extent to sexual abuses. Surely it is the duty of doctors in general to act in accordance with this large agreement. It would simplify matters very much and perhaps lead to the stamping out of a very troublesome disease. Epilepsy has been very much on the increase of late years, and any reasonable methods should be adopted to stay its progress. A word in season is worth a ton of medicine in these cases, and as regards the feelings of the victims, it would be better to give them a slight shock than to allow them to go on suffering in ignorance. In cases where the disease is hereditary, the patients themselves would not take offence at being questioned. It is only the guilty who are afraid of the truth. Other diseases are traceable to l'abus de plaisir de l'amour. It has been mentioned already that that terrible scourge, consumption, is traceable to the same cause. And there now follows another quote in French. Premature or excessive sexual desires and indulgences, and still more the crime of self-pollution, are the chief of the class of causes in producing tubercular phthisis and several other maladies. Several instances have occurred in my practice of persons having admitted this when afflicted with phthisis or with any other of the maladies entailed by this vice, and they were conscious of the cause only when too late, and often when their minds and the powers of volition were too much weakened to resist the impulse to its commission. Even married people who have become addicted to it previously to marriage have continued it subsequently, as they have themselves confessed to me in several instances. Close quote, Dr. Copland, Dictionary of Medicine. Quote, the loss of too much semen occasions lassitude, debilitates, and renders exercise difficult. It causes convulsions, emaciation, and pain in the membrane of the brain. It deadens the senses, and particularly the sight, gives rise to a dorsal consumption, and various other disorders which are connected with these. Close quote. Boerhaave, Onanism, page 11. Quote, young people of either sex who devote themselves to lasciviousness destroy their health in dissipating those powers which were destined to bring their bodies to the greatest degree of vigour, and they at length fall into consumption. Close quote. Ludwig, quoted by Tissot. Quote, too great a dissipation of the semen weakens the spring of all the solid parts. Hence arises weakness, laziness, inertness, phthisis, dorsal consumption, numbness, a deprivation of the senses, stupidity, madness, fainting, and convulsions. Close quote. Klukoff, quoted by Tissot. Such a text as this last, nicely illuminated, framed and glazed, would make a valuable wedding present to young married people. We have also Tissot's experience. He knew of several young people who had been attente de consumption par la detestable manoeuvre de la masturbation. Several other eminent men, such as M. Lond, Charles Mauriac, Mr. Lewis, M. de Goster, Van Sweeten, and others might be quoted to the same purpose. I do not assert that everyone suffering from consumption is addicted to the vices in question, But I point to the fact that in many cases, that fearful complaint is a direct result of indulgence. Quote, cancer may develop in the kidneys or the bladder, primarily, or involve these organs when commencing elsewhere. In women, however, the uterus is certainly liable to become the seat of cancer. From the recorded facts, it would appear that there is some connection between such cancer and great functional activity in the genitalia. There seems no question that great sexual indulgences has an influence over the production of cancer. Close quote. Milner-Fothergill, Diseases of Advanced and Sedentary Life. The danger alone of producing this terrible complaint should be sufficient to cause alarm and to cause people to stop and think before giving way to indulgence. There follows another long French quote. Cancer is said to be rapidly on the increase. During the last 30 years, its mortality has risen 117%. Most incurable diseases, in fact, seem to have been on the increase during that period. According to Mr. J.F. Mills, who is responsible for a series of articles produced in the Clarion, dealing with the physical degeneration of the masses, quote, the death rate from diabetes has risen from 29 to 81, a rise of 52 million or 179%. The death rate from apoplexy has risen from 535 to 577, an increase of 42 per million or nearly 8%. Valvular disease of the heart from 235 to 360, an increase of 125 per million or 60%. Bright's disease from 220 to 278, increase of 56 per million or 20%. Urinary diseases from 246 to 468 per million or nearly doubled. Close quote. These are all very important diseases, and they are all affected by the vices alluded to. If they are incurable, they are at least preventable, and this shows where the efforts of medical men are being misapplied. They have been so absorbed with the patching up of broken constitutions that they have not allowed themselves sufficient time to study natural processes. Those who have carried their inquiries into the study of generation and the influence of the sexual act on the nervous system have been more successful, and to them suffering is no longer the mystery that it is to those whose efforts have been expended in the patching up business, and they are now able to trace at least all degenerative diseases to overindulgence in or violations of that act. Dr. Kirschman has told us, quote, by far the most important influence of sexual excess is upon the nervous system, close quote. Therefore, if the nervous system become disorganized, as it must with overindulgence, all organs of the body which are regulated by the nervous system must fail more or less in the performance of their functions. The heart flags, the circulation of the blood is sluggish, respiration is weak, and therefore fails to purify the blood. The juices necessary for digestion are insufficient or of inferior quality, and so the body is not properly nourished and is subject to all kinds of disease. These conditions, once acquired, it is easy to conceive how a body goes from bad to worse, until eventually it is unable to digest sufficient food to nourish it. Quote, nervous exhaustion, whatever its occasion, is a pathological degradation from which there is ever ready to spring up a plentiful crop of nerve ailments. Close quote. Norman Kerr, MD, Inebriety. The heart is often the first organ to suffer from excessive draining of nerve force, and the first indications of disease are palpitations and shortness of breath. Quote, masturbators who have long been in the habit of giving way to that vice especially complain of these symptoms, and often put them before all others. I might indeed give palpitation a prominent place among the results of sexual excess. Close quote. Dr. Kirschman, from Zimson's Cyclopedia, Volume 8. Paraplegia, a peculiar form of spinal paralysis, in which voluntary motion is interrupted below the affected part of the spinal cord, quote, may be brought on by various causes, chiefly of an exhausting kind, by cold, by intemperance in drinking, by excessive sexual intercourse, or still more surely, by self-abuse. I have had the last cause assigned to me voluntarily by patients themselves. Close quote. Sir Thomas Watson. Courier Saint Vitti, quote, all circumstances adapted to increase the excitability of the nervous system at the period of sexual development are of great influence in producing this disease, such as premature excitement of the sexual passions. Close quote. From Zimson's Cyclopedia, Volume 14. Fottrell and Vent speak especially of the consequences of self-abuse, practiced in great excess previous to puberty. Fottrell's patients were all onanists. Neurosis. Quote, we meet with spasm in the bladder in the hypochondriacal and hysterical, and in very nervous persons in general, in whom mental excitement, excessive sexual indulgence, the incautious use of catheterides, occasionally also it is met with in connection with onanism and spermatorrhea. Close quote. Dr. Liebert, Zimson's Cyclopedia, Volume 8. Hysteria. Quote, more frequently, however, does sexual over-irritation, particularly that induced by onanism, cause the disease. Close quote. Dr. Jolly, Zimson's Cyclopedia, Volume 14. Vasomotor and trophic neurosis. Quote, other writers have laid it to excess in venery or onanism. Close quote. Dr. Uhlenberg, Zimson's Volume 14. Tremor. Quote, as causative may also be mentioned, excess in venery and onanism. Close quote. Uhlenberg. Atrophy of the cerebrum. Dr. Hitzig mentions the practice of onanism by a little girl of 12 suffering from the above affliction. From Zimson's Volume 12. Spermatorrhea. Quote, masturbation plays also a prominent part among the abuses of the genital organs. To speak plainly, the majority of those who suffer from spermatorrhea either are or have been masturbators. Either they have abandoned themselves to this vice alone, or they have indulged in it after giving way to ordinary sexual excess. Close quote. Kirschman, Zimson's Volume 8. Now I think I have quoted a sufficient number of authorities to show that almost all diseases are traceable, directly or indirectly, to sexual abuses. By abuses, I mean not only the practice of masturbation, but also of ordinary sexual intercourse, so far as it is practiced for mere pleasure. The pathological effect on the system is identical in each case, the only difference being that the first is a solitary process, which can be indulged in at any time, and is therefore indulged in more frequently, and it is also practiced at a much earlier age, long before ordinary intercourse is possible. Nature is no respecter of legal documents, and the fact of persons getting married by law has not absolved them from the penalties inflicted by nature for violations of nature's law. It is as possible for a man to be profligate with one woman as with many, and it is possible for a woman to be wanton with her own husband. Quote, the only excuse for reproduction is improvement. Beasts merely propagate their kind, but the offspring of noble men and women will be superior to themselves as their aspirations are, By their fruit ye shall know them. Close quote. Thoreau, Essay on Chastity and Sensuality. It is no use saying that man has discretionary powers and knows when to stop, while his capacity for discretion is rendered nil by the ignorance on all sexual matters in which he is brought up. He very seldom receives any instruction from his parents, and the subject is tabooed in ordinary conversation. At the same time, he is given to understand that matrimony is the only state worth striving after. The bulk of the current literature deals with the tender passion in one way or another, which tends to inflame his mind with amatory ideas, and there is little wonder that he gives unrestrained scope to his passions as soon as occasion offers. This, in itself, would be a sufficient cause for deterioration, but the case is far more serious. If children and young people remained chaste until such time as it was deemed fit that they should marry, it would not be so bad, but under existing circumstances such a course is difficult. It is impossible to bring them up in absolute ignorance of sexual matters. Therefore, unless they are cautioned that certain actions are wrong, they are almost sure to become contaminated, especially when they attend public schools, where children of all grades are brought together. Knowledge of the masturbatory act is now almost universal among school children, and steps to prevent its practice must be taken without loss of time. That is, if we wish to preserve the race. Quote, "The sexual instinct buds in a boy. He does not know why. He cannot understand it at first. If much alone, he stumbles by accident upon some unnatural means of gratification. If with other children, someone teaches him and the boy becomes a victim. Babies and young children are sometimes abused by their nurses, and indeed there are so many routes leading to the same result that it is wonderful how any one escapes, as some few certainly do. The only safe course is to assume that they all trifle more or less with themselves, or at least that they will do so unless precautions are used to guard them against it. The child must be recognised as a reasonable human being. He must go to bed at a regular hour when tired out with his day's duties. He will sleep at once, and he should not be allowed to lie in bed in the morning. He should not be left too much to himself or with older boys, if it can be avoided, or with older girls." Close quote. From Wood's Household Practice of Medicine, Hygiene and Surgery, Volume 2. This shows the necessity of watchfulness on the part of parents and teachers, and not only of watchfulness, but of instructions being given to children. The vice is of such a subtle nature that it might be practiced by a child for some considerable time before the effects were sufficiently apparent to be noticed by a casual observer, and by that time irreparable damage may be done. The nervous system of a child is of such a delicate and complex nature that if once disorganized, it is doubtful if it ever regains its perfect condition. Thus a child, once given to this vice, adopts a neurotic condition which prevents it from ever attaining the perfect adult stage of development. Quote, "Babies and young children are sometimes abused by their nurses." Close quote. Many would, no doubt, be sceptical as to the possibility of young babies being contaminated with this evil. Yet it is on record that babies of a very tender age have practiced it themselves. Quote, "Dr. Beaver showed a case of masturbation in an infant aged 11 months. Close quote. Lancet, December 6th, 1890. There then follows another quote in French. "The cause of this condition, in these particular cases, it is unnecessary to discuss here. It is sufficient to note that such a condition is possible. Before bringing this chapter to a close, I should like to refer briefly to another important feature of the result of l'abus de plaisir sexuels, its influence in the production of alcoholism. I mentioned earlier that there was an undermining influence which seemed to be the cause of men giving way to drink. In some cases, shortly after marriage, the young man gradually adopts irregular habits and he seems to lose all self-respect, frittering away his evenings at public houses, sacrificing all powers of volition, all spontaneity and cheerfulness, all manliness, and eventually dwindling down into a confirmed sot. In some cases, the wife was nearly as bad as the man. This condition was hardly to be explained as the result of alcohol alone. Therefore, I suspected that it was another evil result of sexual excess. This was evidently not a generally accepted theory, for I had searched a good many temperance works without being able to find any allusions to it, until eventually I came across Dr. Norman Kerr's work on inebriety, and read as follows at page 171. Quote, "A rarely acknowledged but significant cause exciting to inebriety is sexual excess. In several cases, I have been consulted, in one case by both husband and wife, with reference to inebriety, developed unexpectedly within a few months after marriage. And careful scrutiny led to the diagnosis of the morbid antecedent being a prostration from excessive intercourse. These cases are amenable to treatment, and on an observation of the principal prescription, moderation in conjugal rights, recovery has been complete. Cases in advanced life have been under my care." Close quote. This brings the solution of another important problem within the precincts of probability. More than 2,000 years ago, it was stated by the Greek philosopher Antisthenes, quote, "The end of philosophy is to subdue the passions and prepare for every condition of life." Close quote. We must subjugate the passions before we can retrieve our position today. Temperance and chastity are the two virtues to be adopted if we want to hold our own, and the sooner we recognise this fact, the better it will be for the race. End of chapter 5.